Last Monday, I went to the bank to cash some checks. As I was waiting on the teller to process the transactions, there was another employee that came around the corner. And as the lady rounded the corner, she stopped at the place where I and this other teller were. After she stopped, she said, "It is awful to get old." After making that statement, she talked about some general aches and pains in her body. Once that third person finished, I turned to her and said, "How old are you?" This lady looked at me and didn't answer my question. After failing to get a reply from her, I asked my question again, this time with a little more force. "How old are you?" She paused for just another moment and then finally said, "I'm 31. We spoke for a little longer, and then the three of us went our separate ways. Last week, if you were here on the Sunday morning, we presented the idea of being tired. Today, we want to continue that theme, that subject. We want to look at that, explore that in a little more detail in coming Sundays. But for today, we want to think about it in terms of the physical body. If you've looked at the outline, you probably already know that we're going to be spending the bulk of our time in the book of Ecclesiastes, Ecclesiastes chapter 12. If you found that chapter, let's start by seeing what we have in the first verse. Solomon said, "Remember. Remember also thy Creator in the days of thy youth, before the evil or the difficult, the hard days come, and the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them." Solomon warns us that when it comes to the early years, the early time in our life, that we need to be careful. He said, you begin to think about God, you remember, you follow the Creator early in the days of your youth. Well, why do that, Solomon? The answer to that question is found in the following verses, especially verses 3 through 7. Now, I'm not sure exactly what Solomon had in mind when he talks about old age in Ecclesiastes chapter 12. I would, however, need some strong convincing to believe that he thought that 31 years of age is old. People can, as they think about the aging process, as they go through the aging process, they can begin to feel, perhaps, some of the effects of aging very early in life. And some of the effects, some of the consequences of aging can be significant. We've seen how this chapter begins. Let's now dig into it a little more deeply. Let's see what we've got in that second verse. Again, the same chapter. He says, before the sun and the light and the moon, and the stars are darkened, and the clouds return after the rain. Well, someone says, well, I understand what the sun and the moon and the stars are, but why talk about these items? Why also mention a storm or give us that image? Well, the idea, again, as you look at the context, it involves youth. As you think about a storm, it's something that may be very violent. It's something that certainly leaves an impression on us. But after the storm, it may be that the sun comes out. And even though things perhaps were difficult, dodging the raindrops, or maybe there was some hail, things turn out to be a little brighter after the storm passes. A similar thing is true when it comes to youth. When you think about young people, there may be some bad times, some difficult times. Maybe they're exhausted, but they get a little rest, and it seems like hours later or maybe the next day they bounce back and everything is just fine. Solomon says when it comes to the later years, it doesn't always work like that. Ecclesiastes 12:2 may also be a reference to a person's judgment, a person's mind, their understanding, and their affection. You see, the wise man, as he prepares for verses 3 through 7, he's warning people, he's warning each one of us, that time, advanced age, is going to take some toll. It's going to have a great effect on the body and on our lives. We're not going to be able to spring back as quickly as we once did. He's indicating to us that with age, typically some of our abilities are going to suffer some kind of decline. As he starts moving into this a little more deeply, let's see what we find in that third verse. Here he says, in the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble, and the strong men shall bow themselves, and the grinders cease because there are few, and those that look out the windows shall be darkened. Our body, in verse 3, is compared to a house. And not just a house, but it is compared to a house which has some problems. He says there's something in this house that trembles or shakes. Well, that, of course, is a reference to our hands. A man or a woman. In life, in the earlier years, they might be someone who used their hands. And maybe as they use their hands, they use their hands in a highly skilled way. Think about the surgeon. You go to the surgeon and you shake his hand. You look at his hands and you see, of course, see somebody like that. You're thinking, you're not going to perform any operation on me. But you see the steady hands of the surgeon and you have some confidence with that. But one day, the rock steady hands of the surgeon are no longer completely solid. They begin to quiver. You may or may not know that there have been some surgeons, I suspect that they all try to do this, but at least some surgeons have insured their hands. I know of one man, he insured his hands for $8 million. and maybe some others ensure their hands for even more. When you look at other professions, you find that other individuals, if they have not insured their hands, they've at least thought about it. They've investigated it. Barbers have been interested in insuring their hands. Dentists, musicians, massage therapists. There are people who use their hands. That's how they make the money. That's how they make their living. And they know that when their hands begin to tremble, they know that if their hands become weak and fail, they are in trouble. Solomon says, as we think about life, those hands, they can age, they can begin to fail, they can tremble and have other problems. The doctor that once had those rock steady hands, at some point in life, they can start shaking like a leaf. The fellow who was the electrician, and maybe in those earlier years, he had those strong, those powerful, those robust hands, and they never shook. Now, just to make a wire connection, it's difficult for him. The hands that used to shake so much may now pick up a piece of paper, and it's almost impossible to read because it's shaking so much. Along with the shaking hands. In that third verse of Ecclesiastes chapter 12, we read about the strong men. And the strong men are now beginning to bow. Well, if we're dealing with the hands, we now turn to the feet, the lower half of our body. Most of us at one point in time have seen someone who has weakened legs. Perhaps the weakness in the legs has caused someone now to walk with a cane. Or maybe they're using a walker. Or maybe the legs have become so weak that a person needs to use a wheelchair. As we think about those weakened legs, we know about some of the problems that can come from them. Bones may shrink. We find that as we think about the legs, joints may become stiff. Atrophy may be something that sets in and begins to overtake the muscles. When you think about the legs, they're supporting the weight of the human body for a long, long time, typically many years, and finally they begin to bow. Our arms, our legs, they can begin to tire with time. But in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, Solomon says that's not the end of the story. He also mentions at the end of verse 3, the grinders. And he says those grinders can begin to cease. What are the grinders? Well, if you are a good guesser, a good Bible student, you probably know that the grinders would refer to our teeth. Teeth can break. Maybe you have at some point had a tooth break. Or maybe you have had a disease and you've lost some teeth because of that. If you're not aware of it, and I think this is especially important for our young people, if you're not aware of it, there are illegal drugs, not every illegal drug, but there are some illegal drugs which can destroy your teeth. If you value your teeth, stay away from illegal drugs. If you, especially in later years, become someone who is toothless or relatively toothless, it is not a fun process. Getting false teeth is generally expensive, and it's not much fun to eat. Now, someone says, we have some technology. We can fix some of those things. That's true, as far as going back and trying to offer some corrections. But still, it's expensive, and it's not as good as the original equipment. Try to preserve, to the best of your ability, that part of a physical body. Now, in our study so far of Ecclesiastes 12, what have we seen? We've seen some problems with the hands. We've seen some problems with the feet. We've seen some problems with the teeth. Is there anything else in Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 3? Yes, there is. We also, as we look at this verse, find a reference to looking out darkened windows. Here is, of course, a reference to eyesight. Time will generally diminish the sight of people. Now, we may not need to be old before we begin to suffer some sight problems. Sometimes a person has sight problems, sight issues early in life. They may be nearsighted, they may be farsighted, or maybe they're both. Maybe in the later years we have cataracts, or maybe we have glaucoma, or there is another eye issue. But Solomon, as he's thinking about the things that people can face, the things that can sometimes make a person physically tired, a person says, it's wearing me out not being able to see well. Moving on to verse 4, let's see what we find there. And he says, And the doors shall be shut in the street, when the sound of the grinding is low, and one shall rise up at the voice of a bird, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low. Unless an environment is especially noisy, you will rarely hear a young person say, I didn't hear that. Usually the hearing of young people is very, very good. But that good hearing that someone has in the early years of life, oftentimes that begins to decline. And in later years, hearing can be a significant issue. By the time we hit the age of 50, someone's probably recommending that we get a hearing test. And maybe by the age of 50, perhaps a little later in life, sometimes earlier, we find that we need some kind of hearing aid. In the middle of verse 4, we find a reference to birds. Not only is there a reference to birds, there is a reference to the sounds that birds make. Solomon said that people would get up at the sound of a bird. Now, somebody might say, wait a minute, that just doesn't make sense to me. If you can't hear, how can you hear a bird? Well, that's not the point as far as listening to the bird or hearing the chirping of a bird. The point here is about sleeping. You find sometimes that young people in the early years, they sleep and they sleep well. They're out there, they maybe are involved with a strenuous activity. Maybe they've done something like a track meet, and when they, even before they get home, the bus is perhaps not the best environment, the car is not the best environment to sleep in, but the young person has no difficulty. I mean, they hit the car and they close the door and they've zonked out. But you know, in the later years, it doesn't always work like that. When you find in the more advanced years, people can have a difficult time getting to sleep. After they once get to sleep, they may not sleep very well. You might find a person who says, it's been a long time, days, weeks, months. It seems like years have gone by since I've been able to get a decent night's rest. My body, because of the limited sleep I'm getting, does not fully recharge. A problem of age, physical fatigue. Looking now at verse 5. Solomon, as he thinks about the aging process, we look at something else. Yea, they shall be afraid, those in the later years. They shall fear that which is high. And terror shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall blossom, and the grasshopper shall be a burden, and desire shall fail, because a man goeth to his everlasting home, and the mourners go about in the streets. Heights. If you talk to someone who is in the later years, they may say that heights are not a place where they want to be. Heights can terrify them. Maybe there's a fear of falling. After a person gets off the ground, maybe a couple feet, or you may find an older person who says, I had no difficulty up on a 6-foot ladder, a 10-foot ladder, a 16-foot ladder, a high extension ladder in the early years. But he said, I don't do that now. Don't go up and work on roofs because I have a fear of falling. When you think about younger people, you find that they are often individuals who feel that they have sure-footedness. There are things that they will do as far as perhaps walking across a balance beam. Maybe there is a log which has fallen across a creek, and the young person will almost run across that log, not thinking, I might fall. They're sure-footed. But you find someone who is in the later years, and I'm not going to associate an age with that. I'll get in trouble for sure. But if you find someone in the later years, you'll find that they're probably not going to be as sure-footed. They're not going to not only refuse to run across a log, probably not walk across the log. There's a fear of falling and a fear of breaking a bone. The terror's in the way. We also find that that is a concern in later years. Being young. Being willing to go to a lot of places. Sometimes in the dark. Young people are often fearless. It may seem fun and not challenging at all. But as the later years come, there are terrors in the way. When it comes to the nighttime, an older person may think, my eyesight is not what it used to be. I have poor balance. My reflexes are slow. So when it comes to the time of day when I can't see very well, I need to be very, very careful. And then he mentions the grasshopper. There are a couple of different explanations for that, but my take on it is that it is an illustration, a hyperbole. Just about everybody can pick up a grasshopper. But small things in life become a burden. In later years, you might find someone who says, I am concerned about getting on a ladder. I'm concerned about getting on a chair and changing out a light bulb. Now, for someone who is in the teen years, someone who's in the 20s, changing out a light bulb, that's silly. Who'd be afraid of that? But there are some other things. Somebody says, I've got some salt that needs to go into my water softener. Well, how big is the bag? It's only 20 pounds. Young person says, 20 pounds? Boy, I can just pick that up and dump it in there with one hand, no problem. But you find somebody who is in the later years, and that 20-pound bag is tough. Maybe getting that gallon of milk, which I think is rated at about 8 or 10 pounds, is tough to lift up. Bringing in a sack of groceries in the later years might be tough. You see, physical fatigue is real. And you read about it, you find references to it in places like Ecclesiastes 12. It's associated with aging. Now, in the younger years, it's possible for someone to look at what's happening to some older people, maybe their parents, maybe other relatives, some friends, maybe the neighbors down the street. And it is possible for a young person to say, I will never be like that. I'm never going to let a gallon of milk be too heavy for me. I'm never going to be somebody who struggles with a sack of salt. I'm never going to be somebody who's going to struggle with putting in a light bulb. That is not going to be what happens in my life. Guess what? God says, if you live long enough, your health may be better than others. You might be able to do some more things than other people do. But if you live long enough, you will begin to experience the very things that are described in Ecclesiastes 12. You will begin to suffer the effects of aging. Somebody says, I'm never going to get gray hair. Well, maybe not if you color it. Somebody else said, I can get false teeth if I use the illegal drugs and they fall out or something else happens. And I can get some surgeries to rectify some of the problems. And I can get some pills from the doc to take care of all these symptoms. You might be able to head off some of the symptoms. You might be able to change some things with surgery and perhaps by coloring the hair. But if you are someone who is a created being who lives on this planet, and we all are, you will begin to suffer the kinds of things that we find in Ecclesiastes 12. You see, we all age. And unless the Lord returns before we die, we will begin to experience at some point the very kinds of things we're talking about this morning, sometimes at the age of 31, sometimes earlier. After Solomon has all these things to say about the aging process, he switches gears. He moves to a very logical subject, and we might say conclusion, and that is death. At the end of verse 5, which I read, he talks about mourners. And he says that there would be mourners in the streets. Now, that might seem to be a strange custom to us, to have mourners in the streets. If we go back and we look at the ancient culture, though, we begin to find that it was a culture where when it was time for a funeral, there were people who were paid mourners. There were people who would come and they would actually be paid to grieve, and they would wail and they would moan, and they had some limited stitching in their clothing, and they'd rip their clothing, and then after they finished that funeral, they put a few more stitches in, and then they go to the next place and rip it, and they do all kinds of things to show great grief. Somebody says, well, that's kind of a strange custom. Why would people pay others to come and mourn at a funeral? Well, my understanding of that was it was designed to encourage others to show their grief. Just as you've had sometimes, Billy Graham was known for this, to have walkers. He would issue an invitation and there would be people who would be paid to start coming down to the front to encourage others to respond in a similar way. So the ancient world had mourners, paid people to encourage others to grieve. Solomon, by bringing this up, makes it clear that death is also a clear part of humanity. Staying with that line of thought, we move down to the information now that we have in verse 6 of this chapter. He says, before the silver cord is loosed, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher is broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern. A golden bowl, that's the illustration that I want to focus on. And a golden bowl is something that likely to most minds would be very significant, very important, very valuable. And that's true for us. When we think about who we are, individuals created in the image of God, we are important. We are people who have great value because of how God made us. Solomon says, if you can imagine this bowl, he says there's something attached to it. What's joined to the bowl, Solomon? He says it's attached to a cord. It's attached to a silver cord. He says the day comes where that silver cord is snipped. It's cut. Well, if the cord is holding the bowl and you cut the cord, then obviously the bowl is going to fall. And depending on what the bowl hits, it's probably going to break. Imagine, if you will, that precious bowl. It's being suspended. It's cut. It strikes the ground. And Solomon says, if you can imagine that, the splattering, the busting, the breaking of the bowl. He compares that to death. One day, our cord is going to be cut. And when the cord to our life is cut, we don't know the day, we don't know the hour, we don't know the circumstances. But when that cord is cut, today, tomorrow, maybe several decades from now, we're going to die. There are no questions about when. Or there are questions about when it's going to occur, but there are no questions about if. Someone says, well, that's not a very pleasant thought for me to think about, but if that's my lot in life, and it is, what's going to happen when the cord to my life, to my bowl, is cut? Good question. An important question. And Solomon answers that question in the very next verse. Let's see what we've got in verse 7. And he says, and the dust returns to the earth as it was, and the spirit returns unto God who gave it. At death, when that cord is cut, when our bowl is broken, our spirit returns to God. I've been to a few funerals, and I'm sure you have as well. After we die, our body may be placed in a casket. Some have been simple. I've seen some of the least expensive caskets, and I've seen some very expensive caskets. But regardless of what kind of casket is used, regardless of what kind of funeral we have, and it might be the nicest funeral money can buy, whatever is said by the person who says some words at that time, and it might be the finest funeral message that's ever been preached, regardless of all the details concerning our funeral, what's done to the body doesn't matter. Solomon says very plainly, it's going to return to the dust of the earth. It is, however, the eternal part of our being, the part that returns to God, that's what counts. You see, there is an afterlife. that begins after the process of death takes place. Many want to know what the future is going to be like. We find the answer to that question in Ecclesiastes chapter 12. God says you're going to get old. Well, and again, that's a general rule. There's some people, obviously, who die before the age of 1 or 5 or 10. But generally speaking, people get old. And there are the consequences of aging that bring about physical fatigue. And then God says, here's how the process concludes. You die. I once read that old age is God's final call to encourage people to repent. I like that. And I use that quote from time to time. Old age is God's final call to encourage people to repent. The person who came up with that idea is exactly right. The world, as we look around, we see the unsaved, they see aging as a curse. People, and especially unsaved, they look at youth and they want to preserve it. They want to do anything that they possibly can to keep the looks and keep the health of youth. People will spend unbelievable, I mean literal fortunes, to keep the earlier years intact. Do you know that there are some people now, some billionaires, who are seeking technology? There was a big conference not too long ago. There were about 7 billionaires that met with a fella, big secret meeting. Obviously not too secret if I know about it. But anyway, there was this big secret meeting, and they're looking for ways to take their brain, preserve that, and keep that somehow in suspension until a future time where their brain, their consciousness, who they believe they are, that can be put into a new body. And then they can continue their life. People are spending big bucks trying to keep their lives alive on earth. But you know, the wisest man who ever lived, Solomon, said, understand that this life involves an aging process for each one. It is a guarantee. Each day that you live, each hour that you live, your body is in a state of decay. And that's why he begins this chapter, Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 1, we read it. Remember your creator. When and why? When in the days of youth, start early. Why? Because you are a dying individual. When you get tired, and all of us do, remember that our body is in the process of wearing out. Every single day, every second, we get closer and closer to death. Someone says, well, that's bad news. It is if you're not a Christian. For the Christian, we're one day closer to the eternal reward. Death will come unless Jesus returns. Death will come to every single person in this room. Look around. You're looking at walking dead people. The question becomes, what's going to happen when our body fully gives out? If we die of old age, will the aches, the pains that we have in this life be no longer with us in eternity, or will they only be enhanced? I found, and this is very sad, but people sometimes go to the funeral for someone and say, because the person suffered so much in life, at least he or she or they are out of their misery. Oftentimes, that's not true. Oftentimes, that is a bald-faced lie. The suffering that they had in this life was undoubtedly bad. All the hospital stays, all the procedures, all the injections, all the things that were done. But the Bible, if God told the truth, the suffering in the hereafter is nothing compared to all the aches and pains in this life. Today, more importantly this morning, are we ready to leave our physical body and enter into the afterlife? If not, we may never have another chance. How bad, how sad, how tragic to live with the aches and pains of this life and then go to a place where they are amplified beyond belief, beyond measure, and not for a lifetime, not for 50, not for 100, not for 1,000, not for 10,000, not for a million years, but everlasting. Jesus said most of the world will experience that faith, that fate. But he said you don't have to. If we're willing to believe, that's a starting point. If we're willing to repent, to change our life so it conforms to God's will, willing to confess that Christ is the Son of God, willing to be baptized into Christ, Galatians 3:27, for the forgiveness of every single sin, to rise and start walking in the newness of life, the aches and pains in life may still be with us, but those eternal aches and pains will never be ours, and the choice is ours. If we're on the wrong side of the fence for eternity, don't wait. Don't hope for another chance. Don't hope that God is going to see you through another year. We have only one more opportunity that we know of, and that's now. And we invite you to take that if you need it as we stand and sing the selected song.